first want to take this opportunity to welcome those of you who are visiting with us. If you came expecting to see Heath, surprise, but Heath is off in Texas in a meeting, and when he gets to go off, we get to fill in sometimes. So I am again appreciative of the opportunity to speak to you, perhaps bring some things to your attention that will help you to live this life in a little bit better manner. Some of us have probably been to the video store and rented movies, or sometimes we see some movies on TV, and one of the things that happens when you put that little disc in the VCR, the first thing they have, warning, you know, it's not lawful to copy this under penalty of law, and the FBI is watching and all these things. I'm not sure that anybody ever pays any attention to it. But also in these warnings they have before you, they have something that they didn't have when I was a kid called a rating system. And you see that the rating system, there's G and R and PG-13 and all these kinds of things, and they always appear. You take a look at some of the little banners on the screens when you go to watch the movies on TV, and they'll say, you know, warning, this picture contains adult language and adult situations and all these things, or, you know, parental discretion is advised. Well, this morning I'm going to give you a little bit of a warning that this sermon contains some adult material. So before all of you parents start grabbing up the kids and heading for the nursery, we need to understand that this is not going to be the adult type stuff that you expect to see in the movies, but we're going to talk a little bit about them rather than show them to you. So one of the things that we see in a lot of the films and movies is this matter of adult language. And when we see this thing, adult language, some of the first thoughts we have are some four-letter words that we go around, and many of you parents, and I'm not so sure about the younger parents, Harold, but some of us older parents, used to tell our kids that if you say these words, we're going to wash your mouth out with soap. And I kind of preferred ivory to dial, but, you know, they don't often give you the choice. But that's one of the things we say, to try to get our children not to use these kinds of words. I wasn't around in 1939, but I have seen Gone with the Wind. And I'm told that the ending of that movie was one of the first time one of the four-letter words was ever introduced into the movie. Well, if old Clark Gable were alive today, he could use a lot more of them than the one he used, because all you have to do is watch the movies, turn on TV, and it seems like the people today cannot even talk without using these kinds of words. But there are more to the idea of four-letter words than just those. I kind of get tickled sometimes because they talk about these four-letter words being adult language. Some of you young parents are going to get your kids in school, and just remember how long it takes them to start spelling and pronouncing four-letter words. About second or third grade? And the fourth grade, the fifth grade, and the sixth grade, we get on to bigger and better words, don't we? And somehow it's adult to only be able to use these four-letter words. But on the other hand, if the words that we use are 10 or 12 letters and mean the same thing, what is our intent? We need to understand that it's not necessarily the words that are involved here, but how we use them and what we mean by them. Another thing that we talk about when we're talking about adult language is obscenity. And first thing we think about when we talk about obscenity, we think about the lust of the flesh and all of these things that go on in this world. But obscene has a definition that goes even a little bit beyond that. It talks about offending modesty or decency. We may not be talking about the flesh, but other things that are modest or decent, impure, filthy, vile, is put into this definition. And of course, we know what that means, don't we? Or at least we think we do. A lot of the words I found in looking up and doing the research here is I found some words that were longer than four letters, and I really couldn't put it on there, because really what people want us to do today is give us a list of words that we can't say. Well, I don't think there is a list, but there is a principle behind the words that we need to take into consideration. Our kids today use the word gross, and there are some obscene things that are involved with that. So we say something is gross. You know, when you go out hunting, and the young men will sometimes sit around as you field dress the game. But to the young ladies, that's gross. And to them, it is obscene, lewd. And in one definition I found where it says lustful. So words that describe these emotions, words that describe these activities, are obscene. And we should be careful how and when and if we use those kinds of things. Another word that we use to describe adult language is profanity. I'm not sure whether that's even good adult language or not, but we again think of profanity in defining these four-letter words. He used profanity. But yet if you go to the dictionary and you look up this definition, it is to treat things, and it puts in parentheses, holy things, with contempt or disregard. You know, we've had a Bible study here for the last few weeks talking about Paul, and we know that the Jews in Jerusalem were accusing Paul of profaning the temple. And specifically what he did is he brought in uncircumcised people. Well, he had disregard for the rules that God had laid down for the temple. Or maybe he had disregard for the traditions that the Pharisees and the Sadducees had. So in that sense, he was going against the things that were there. Contempt or disregard. Or the second thing is to put to wrong or unworthy use. And again, there are some terms that we use that do that. Next thing is curse. Well, for those of us that are south of the Ohio Ocean, that's cuss. But it has an idea here of we're going to curse or cuss, we're going to ask God to bring harm on somebody. Or we're just going to want to bring harm on somebody, period. But again, we associate these with the four-letter words. And it talks about to swear at or to cuss. You ever hear somebody say, well, somebody did this to me and I really cussed them out? Well, what did you do? Well, you probably talked dirty to them, or at least what they thought was dirty. You use some of these four-letter words and you use them to try to bring emphasis on the point that you were making. And why in the world, you know, adults would try to use some of these things to emphasize a point that they could make just as well using language, good language, language that does not offend. But again, while we're talking about adult language, we're talking the four-letter words. We're talking about words that offend. They offend modesty. They offend decency. They are not acceptable, if you will, in our culture, our society. Let me suggest to you that we could take our four-letter words and go over into the mountains of Nepal and use those words, and the people say, huh? They wouldn't understand it. But the words we use, we need to know the meaning of and how we're using them and what we want to use them for. And there are ways that we can emphasize what we're saying, and we'll talk about that a little later on, without using them. Lewd, lustful, lecherous, contemptuous, bring evil upon people. That's the language that we define as adult language. And really, adults shouldn't even be using that. Like I say, we'll talk about that in just a few minutes. The next thing you'll see about, and you'll talk about adult beverages. I don't remember. Were you down there at Rocky Fork with us back in 1950 when Brother Hustle was here? You know, I was a little bit shorter than I am now and a whole lot thinner. And it was just about the time when we're talking about coffee. And at that particular time, coffee was an adult beverage. Dad, can I have some coffee? No, boy, it'll stunt your growth. You ever use that? You ever hear that? When you get grown, then you can have it. But right now, that coffee, it'll stunt your growth. Well, my granddad chewed tobacco. I asked him one day for a little chew, and he said, "Nope, can't have that, boy. It'll stunt your growth." Well, didn't take too long till I found some on my own, and believe me, it will stunt your growth if it does to you every time what it did to me. Because it cleaned me out at both ends, and I would never have a bit of food in there to grow on, and it would stunt your growth. And anything that we didn't want kids to have that adults participated in would stunt our growth. Well, we're talking a little bit more than just beverages here. There are some substances that we need to look at too. But when you look up adult beverages, the first thing they want to talk about is that the beverage that contains alcohol. And they talk about it being intoxicating. Intoxicating is a little bit more than four words, a little hard to understand, and it says to make drunk. Well, we're getting down into a five-letter word that we can understand a little bit more. But the real definition of intoxicating here is to be overcome with. In other words, when we take alcohol, the alcohol overcomes us. It releases our inhibitions. It releases our control of things that we would say and things that we would do. And it does, again, we lose control of our thinking. But the beverages are just simply but a group of substances. And we need to understand that things like the marijuana and the cocaine and all of these kinds of things today have the same effect on one's mentality. They release your inhibitions. They take you out of the real world. I had an individual that I worked with who happened to be the third wave going ashore on Omaha Beach on D-Day. And he blamed his constant state of intoxication on that because he said the alcohol helped him to forget. That every time he got sober for any length of time, all he could see was the men coming off of the LSTs going ashore. And then he ended up being with Patton in the Third Army and looking out the windows of his tank and one time seeing his buddy and look out there next and there's nothing but a smoldering pile of metal. And he said all these things had come back to him, and the only way he could get rid of them was to use the alcohol. Well, it takes away these things. That's not what the Bible tells us that we need to do. The Bible tells us that we need to be sober. And these group of beverages and substances, when the Bible talks about being temperate, being moderate, being quiet, being solemn, being dignified, being calm, being sensible, these beverages and substances that people put into their bodies remove the propensity and the control that we have to remain in those kinds of conditions. We need to remember also that the world is continually trying to get us to do this. You remember things like drink responsibly. You only go around once in life. Grab for the gusto. And they paint these things as being more enjoyable than they really are. I told several of you I was down at Ohio University for a year. And I asked to be put into a dorm with other engineers. Well, they didn't pay any attention to my request. They put me in with some school teachers. No offense, Mark. And a music major. And these guys, on Friday night, they'd had all their homework done, and they went uptown to the bar. And Saturday afternoon, when they woke up, I say, "Hey, what'd you do?" "I don't know what we did, but we sure had a good time." "Well, what did you do?" "I don't know." "Well, how do you know it was good?" He says, "Because it took me till 3 o'clock this afternoon to wake up." Put a lot of emphasis on these things. But these are things that happen to us. Drink responsibly and all these other things. But there is an exception to this. Turn with me, if you will, over to 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 23. And there Paul tells Timothy to no longer drink only water, but to take a little wine for his stomach's sake and his oft infirmities. Now, this is a little different than going out and getting smashed. And there are some medicinal qualities to wine. Even the doctors today will tell you this. But again, you have to be competent enough and understand enough not to get hooked on this or not to overdo it. We remember that the early wine in the New Testament was a whole lot weaker than what we have. And some people say, well, we can't do that, but you know what? Us old people, we can take Geritol. Come find out, Geritol's 14% alcohol. But if you come in with Geritol on your breath, it's all right. But if it's Mogan David, we're gonna take care of this. But again, we need to understand what is going on. We don't want to do the things, even if it is Geritol, or mouthwash, or aftershave, or whatever it is some of the kids drink, is that we don't want to lose the control. And we understand, ask the question, why did Timothy refrain? Well, he refrained because of his oft infirmities for his stomach. Now, the idea I talked about earlier where this guy imbibed alcohol to try to forget D-Day on Omaha Beach is not what Timothy did. It wasn't for a physical infirmity he had, it was a mental infirmity, and that won't take it. And why was he told to partake of it? Again, for medicinal purposes. And there are substances and things that we can take that pertain to that. You know, several of us have been in surgery, been in operations. I had a hip replaced. And they gave me a substance that completely did away with all my thinking. I didn't even know what happened until I woke up. But they say, count to 10. I think I got to 1. And it's that quick. But we seem to get out here and get these substances because we want to ease into it. We want to have that feeling of ecstasy and all of these things that go with it. But in essence, what it does is slowly taking us out of control of the things that we do. There are adult situations. And again, we begin to think of these things, and when the thing says adult situations, we begin to think about the lust of the flesh and the sexual pleasures and things that happen in this world. And we understand that the transition period between childhood and adulthood is what they call puberty. You know, we run around and we've got all these little children running around, and every once in a while they have a little problem. And, you know, mommy didn't pin the diaper tight enough. And as they run up and down the hall, they lose it, and we laugh at it, and we have a good time. You wouldn't laugh at it if I forgot to put my belt on some of the pants that my granddad had and took off up the aisle, and I lost my pants. But we laugh at it when they're kids. But when puberty comes along, we understand that Adam and Eve begin naked. And after sin, what'd they do? They covered themselves. God came along and covered them later with skin. There was something different about the nature of man once sin occurred. And it's the same way. The little girls and the little boys grow to a particular age and they begin to notice a change. They get to a point sometimes, boys, when they're no longer just good for being the Indians when we're playing cowboys and Indians. They have some other purpose. They begin to have a little more attraction. You know, they come along and they want to play house, and while you refuse to do that for several years, you're kind of giving them some thought now, aren't you? I remember I gave it some thought. When I played house, it was a little house on the prairie. Didn't want anything to do with these city fellows. But nevertheless, we begin to notice these things. The fleshly desires begin to mature. And then we go back to when God created them male and female, and we begin to understand that the purpose of doing this was so that they might become one flesh. And these desires all hit us, and they're all within us, and we have to control them. But when they're talking about that, we need to understand also that there are three sources that tend to fan the flames of your fleshly desire. The TV, the movies, the books, they all want to give you some idea that all there is in life is fulfilling the desires of the flesh. Well, these things, again, are just advertisements for the one flesh that Paul talks about in 1 Corinthians 6 and chapter in verse 16. We've talked a lot of times about the marriage and what the purpose of marriage is, and one of the first things that we come up with is that one of the purposes of marriage is reproduction. And granted, that's part of what it is. But Paul here in 1 Corinthians 6 and chapter 16 talks about a harlot. And he says, know you not that if you have gone into a harlot, you have become one body with her, one flesh with her? For he saith, the twain shall become one flesh. There's more to the marriage relationship and the sexual relationship than just producing children. And the problem is that God has limited this satisfaction to the marriage relationship, and man has abused it. Man now wants to take this relationship anywhere he can go. And he does this in several different ways. And when we look at the TV and the books and the movies, we find out that all of them contain immodest apparel and reflect the idea of Proverbs chapter 7 and verse 10, which says, and there a woman met him with the attire of a harlot and a crafty heart. The way we dress is an advertisement. You know, we talk about the nudity, you know, total nudity. And then you begin to slowly clothe yourself. Well, where your attire fits will have something to do with what you're advertising. We'll talk again a little bit more about that when we talk about the proper things that happen in the adult situation. But just remember that our behavior and our dress and our language all lead to these certain things. The lesson that we need to take from this particular sermon so far is found in Matthew 18, verses 3 and 4, where he says, and assuredly I say unto you, unless you are converted and become as little children, you'll by no means enter the kingdom of heaven. So if we tell our children that we're going to wash their mouth out with soap if they use certain words, what's God going to do to us? Is he going to allow us into the kingdom unless we become like these little children? We know what we want the children to do. What do we want ourselves to do? We know about these situations. We know about these beverages. What is it that stunts our spiritual growth? What is it? Do we drink of these movies? Do we drink of all these books? Remember, Paul said that there are certain things that are holy, certain things that are pure, and we ought to think on those things. What are we thinking about? What kind of situations are we putting ourselves into? Do we bring all this stuff into our house and dwell on it? Or do we do like Weldon used to say, you know, can't keep the birds from flying over your head, and he's talking there about the temptations and other things, but you just don't let them make a nest in your hair. So we need to, you know, again, think about these things in an adult manner. Well, let's go on here, and let's look at some proper things. Look at some proper adult language. Turn to Colossians chapter 4 and verse 6, and there the Bible tells us to let your speech always be with grace and seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer each one, how you ought to communicate. That means in our communication with one another, we shouldn't be purposely offending them, although when we preach the truth, some are offended, but in that case, it's their problem and not ours. We're talking about the things that we design, not the things which God designs. We're not going to use indecent language. We're not going to be gross. We're not going to be lustful. We're not going to be lecherous. We're not going to be contemptuous. And we're not going to ask God to bring harm upon or try to do it ourselves. And the point of it is here is, where are you most influential? If you went into a bar and you saw all this bad language and you saw all of this loss of control, would you expect to see those people in church on Sunday morning? You expect to see those people in heaven in the after a while when they're doing all these kinds of things. But when we're talking about our language, not so much the words or the letters, the form words, but about our influence. How are we going to convince others that heaven is a place that we want to go and that we want them to come with us? Turn over also to Titus chapter 2, and it tells us some more about the language and the purpose of the language that we are to use. He says, "But as for you, speak the things which are proper for sound doctrine." Some of these four-letter words, is that proper for sound doctrine? When you call upon God to bring harm upon these people, is that sound doctrine? Now, he says, then you're going to speak these things in order that the older men be sober, reverent, temperate, sound in faith and love and patience. And speak these things which are proper for sound doctrine, so that the older women likewise may be reverent in behavior, not slanderers. And how many times have you sat around and had kids talk about somebody else, some other kid, in a slanderous situation? They just don't do that very often, do they? We got to get to be an adult before we get there. And he says, not given to much wine, and speak things which are proper or sound doctrine, so that these older women can be teachers of good things. Yeah, good. There's a four-letter word that's profitable. There are a few others like hunt, fish, and food that are better off than what we use sometimes. But then they are to admonish. So we've got things that are proper, things that we are admonish young women to love their husbands and to love their children. You know, my wife did something the other day and I really cussed her out. What's that got to do with loving your children? Now, I didn't do that. She'll tell you I didn't. But I use that as an example as the difference between teaching to love and teaching to hate. Teaching to love and teaching to bring harm against. We get in an argument with a wife sometimes. What we want to do is make sure she's wrong. And if we can't do it with fact, then we do it with language, right? Now, God's going to understand what we're trying to do. And then he says in verse 6, likewise exhort. So we've got speaking, admonish, and exhorting the young. Exhort the young man to be sober-minded in all things, showing yourself to be a pattern of good works, in doctrine showing integrity, reverence, incorruptibility, sound speech that cannot be condemned. You know, the mere fact that we're talking about adult language and four-letter words is the idea that there is some speech out there that can be condemned. There's some speech out there that is not proper. But he says you need to have the sound speech that you cannot be condemned, that one who is an opponent may be ashamed, having nothing evil to say of you. We're trying to keep evil from being said of us. Why do we say evil or speak evil against our fellow man? Even worse sometimes against our brothers and sisters or our mothers and fathers, the people that we have these relationships with. Some proper adult beverages. Remember, we talked about these beverages being substances and substance, things that overcome you. Things that take over your thought processes. Don't allow you to discern right from wrong. Will lead you towards pleasure rather than good. But again, these beverages or substances are things that loosen your tongue, so to speak, to give us some offending language and all these other kinds of things. And again, when we have these things as products of these beverages, we don't want to use them. If you look at 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 23, as we talked about earlier, Paul there tells Timothy not to drink only water. And what did he really mean to say there? Well, we have an example where water is approved. Water doesn't do any of these things that we've talked about. And Timothy was drinking only water. Didn't wine, intoxicating beverages, some of these substances exist in Timothy's life, in his culture? Weren't there other things to drink? Well, yeah, there were. But Timothy, for some reason, was drinking only water and had to be told to no longer drink only water but to do some things that were good for his physical well-being. So there were more things available, but Timothy was refraining for some reason. Don't suppose it could have been some of the teaching that he'd learned in the Old Testament, do you? That they had said, you know, look not on the wine when it is sparkling, and all of these other things, that Timothy had looked at these and decided that was the way to go. And Paul says, well, there may be some times when that's not all that you need. And then in 1 Corinthians chapter 9 in verse 7, Paul again is talking to them. He says, or who tends a flock and does not drink the milk of the flock? Unless it gets sour, I don't know that milk is going to do you any harm as far as becoming drunk or intoxicated is concerned. There may be some that have lactose intolerance that makes them sick, but it doesn't make them drunk. So there's a couple of things. So there's some drinks that are approved clearly in the New Testament, but all the other things that we drink, we need to evaluate and make decisions based on, does it take away our ability to think? Does it change our judgment in any way? You know, we always joke, Jeff and I, about drinking Mountain Dew. Well, I don't think Mountain Dew is bad at all. I don't lose any of these things. But then again, if I don't get it, I may be a little bit irritable. The same way with some of you and your coffee. But we need to make all of these kinds of judgments based on our influence, how people see us, and whether or not we're going to be able to convert somebody to the cause of Christ. All depends upon the sobriety. And then we're going to have some proper adult situations, and this is where it gets a little difficult. Because all of us as parents have remembered hearing about the birds and the bees. And we try to do these kinds of things, and there are some proper adult situations. Unfortunately, the media, and that's books, movies, TV, papers, tend to dwell on the bad that you never see what's proper, merely because it doesn't make news. God designed us male and female, and that proper adult situation occurs in the marriage relationship, not outside of it. But we always hear about lust of the flesh. We always hear about the harlots. We always hear about the bad things. And how many of you have ever read the Song of Solomon? Taught that once here. And I think I made the comment when I taught it that don't pay any attention if you see me a little bit red in the face. Because we really don't like to talk about those situations, do we? Especially in mixed company. But the Song of Solomon is a description of the joys and the pleasures of married life. And what we think of, or what we hear about sometimes as being bad or lustful or those kind of things, are exactly proper in a marriage in the privacy of bedroom. You don't take it outside. But those things which are there, but we seem to have this idea that the relationship that God has designed for us is bad and it's wrong and it's dirty and it's filthy and it's vile. And Solomon says it's one of the most beautiful experiences that you'll ever have in life is the relationship, the good relationship between a man and a woman in marriage. But what we have sometimes is, and what you hear is, go over to Matthew chapter 5 and verse 28. And there Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount says, but I say unto you, whoever looks on a woman to lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart. And we dwell on adultery, and we dwell on these kinds of things. But what if that verse had said, but I say unto you that whoever looks at his wife to desire her has one of the greatest experiences that God has designed for man. Would our attitude towards the sexual relationship be any different? Sometimes we don't approach it in a proper manner. But again, it's also taught in the scripture, it's abuse, about David and Bathsheba. We understand what took place there. And I bring this up only to illustrate to you that this urge that God has placed in us, being male and female, is very powerful. This urge that David had led to murder. Is the urge that strong in you? You know, I was talking in statistics about a bell curve. There are those that have no desire, and then there's have a little bit. And then over here in this other corner is those that are have the extreme desire. Where was David? David had a very large desire. It led him to design the murder of Uriah. But on the other hand, if David and Bathsheba had been married, would it have been wrong for him to look at her in the bathtub? Should he have turned away from her if he sees her in that state of dress? Should she go into a room and lock all the doors just so she can take a bath if they were man and wife? It's kind of something to think about. We also talked about in adult situation is the attire of a harlot. And unfortunately, the Bible, because I think of the culture that was there, sometimes talk about the women more than they do the men. But in today's world, there's harlots and gigolos. And they have attire. And what is this attire doing? Is this attire not just an advertisement? We look at an advertisement on TV. Who are her customers? What is she selling? Is she after your husband? Is he after your wife? You know, one of the things happens sometimes when we get married, we think that we've tied it up in a knot and that's it. But in this country, half the marriages end up in divorce. Somebody is out there still trying to attract your mate. What are you doing? When we dated, we would go over and the hair would be combed and the perfume and the dress and everything would be all dandy. But there was a preacher, and I can't remember who it was, got up here in the pulpit one time and talked about Old Blue. Many of you remember that. You know what Old Blue was? Old Blue was this tattered, well-worn old bathrobe that is the favorite of your wife. She's not going to get rid of it. She's not going to buy a new one. And it's kind of like the old hee-haw scene where here is a woman sitting there with an ironing board, got curlers in her hair, got Old Blue wrapped around her with a bottle of beer in one hand and a cigarette in the other. Now, I don't expect to see that in any of you ladies, but you might have that cup of coffee and a Tootsie Roll. But the point of it is, you're sitting there and that I never did see my wife that way before we got married. Did you? But all of a sudden, when we get married, we think we've got to quit attracting our spouse. They can just take us for what we are. You know, they talk about Old Blue, but let me give you something, guys. Is it any better than the old pair of blue jeans? The old tattered t-shirt that has your favorite sports team on it with a few stains here and there that you just won't get rid of? Or even worse, an old fishing shirt that you don't want to get rid of, and the last time you wore it, you'd unhook the fish. And is that attractive? What I'm trying to tell you is that husbands and wives need to cultivate proper adult situations in the privacy of their own home. Paul said in 1 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 2 that the reason for having a wife was so that we might avoid sexual immorality. But we need to understand that there are people out there who are trolling, to use a fishing term, for your wife. They're trolling for your husband. If you won't attract them, they will. Do we have such a hold over our spouses that they're going to let us do just anything we want to? That we can aggravate them, we can do all these things, and it won't affect them? These people just have not ceased because we got married. But again, the lesson is that if we're going to enter the kingdom, we've got to become as little children. We've got to put away these childish things. But at the same time, we have to recognize them, and that puts us into an adult situation. Puts us into an adult atmosphere. We know about little children that they are eager to hear from the parent. Are we eager to hear from God? Are we here eager to understand that there is language and situations that will not allow us to influence people to become Christians? And that we need to guide our lives so that we put ourselves into these situations so that we may influence them to want to obey God. But little children are also willing to believe the parents. You ever watch some of these little kids? We've got several of them around here. You know, when they're babies, they kind of smile and they laugh, but they soon begin to start talking, and you go up and you go to talk to one of them. The first thing they do is grab mommy a little bit tighter, bury their head in dad's shoulder. And it shows you the confidence that they have in their parents. Do we have that same kind of confidence in God? Are we willing to believe them? Are we willing to understand what they want to do? And are we willing to change our behavior? You know, one of the things that is a big challenge to all the parents out here is to train their children in the nurture and the admonition of the truth. To train them to be decent. To train them not to use these kinds of things. And when they do things, that we tell them what is not proper, what is proper, and encourage them to do what is done. One of the things that you will see in little children is they're willing to tell what they have done. There is a commercial on the TV that I saw lately where the little boy comes running out, "Mommy, Mommy, I," and if you've seen it, you know what he did. You know, he's learned to use the potty rather than his diapers, and he's willing to do all these kinds of things. But are we willing to tell what we have done? And part of the time we're not, because we understand that the consequences of our action is punishment. So rather than admit that we're wrong, we want to justify it. We want to blame it on somebody else. But if we're going to enter the kingdom, we need to have that characteristic of little children, that we're willing to tell what we have done. This is the idea of confession. They're willing to obey. You ever see all these little kids, when their rewards are there, they're willing to do what somebody wants them to do in order to get them? God has promised us the greatest reward that ever was. He promised us a home in heaven. Are we willing to obey? Are we also willing to continue in that learning? And one of the things you'll find, parents, is that your child that's 5 years old has learned something. You can't quit teaching. They can't quit learning. They'll never survive in this life without being ready to continue in these things. So if we're going to become like little children, we need to hear, we need to believe, we need to repent, which means change our behavior, we need to be willing to confess, and we need to be willing to obey what God would have us to do. And we need to be willing to continue in that learning, just like little children. Let's forget about all these adult situations. Let's be like little children. Let's obey God. If you have a need today to be obedient to God, whether you've obeyed Him once and fallen away, or whether you need to obey Him once more, won't you come as Brother Mark leads us in song.